Philadelphia?
Listen, we had a bomb dropped on us by a black mayor. Do you know what the people did? They re-elected him. You know? Now, you can't get any more apathetic and cold and dead than that. But, you know, just to speak to what my sister was saying about why the MOVE organization supports Mumia, you know, first of all, the MOVE organization is taught to be fair and equal and just. Mumia put his career on the line, his life on the line, telling the truth about MOVE, exposing the baby killings, the beatings, the unjust jailings, the railroad trials that MOVE was experiencing at the hands of the system. You know, Mumia did that. So when Mumia, in turn, was victimized by the system, the only thing that MOVE people could do was to support Mumia, was to throw the support of the organization behind Mumia, based on our coordinator, John Africa, who personally met Mumia and talked with him, specifically, you know, telling us to do everything that we could for Mumia to save his life. And secondly, specifically coordinating our sister Pam Africa to spearhead, you know, Mumia support. And that's where the International Concern Family and Friends of Mumia Abu-Jamal was born. The only thing that MOVE people could do was support Mumia, because he is innocent, because he put himself, you know, on the line to tell the truth about MOVE and issues across the board. I mean, Mumia wrote about all kinds of issues. His commentaries, I mean, they run the gamut. You know, any issue basically you can think about, Mumia has written about. But, you know, just on a personal note, there is no way in the world any MOVE member could sit back and allow the Pennsylvania government, the Philadelphia government, to try to convince people, you know, to get away with the lie that they want to kill Mumia Abu-Jamal because they believe he killed one person, because they believe he killed a cop. There's not one MOVE person existing that could allow this government to say that. Not when the very same government that, you know, is obsessed with killing Mumia dropped a bomb on our family, murdered 11 people, burnt 5 babies alive, and ain't nobody sitting on death row next to Mumia for doing that. And we're going to sit back and let them tell people that they want to execute Mumia because they got a problem with murder, because they believe Mumia murdered one person and they want to kill him. If you got a problem with murder, you got a problem with it across the board, not in certain situations. You know, that's prejudice. You know, that is imbalance. That is wrong. And MOVE have been taught by John Africa not to accept wrong from anybody. So we would expose that kind of inconsistency. But very simply, you know, Mumia is our brother. We love him. We are loyal to him, committed to him, you know, and we will do everything that we can to save his life, because that is what we have been coordinated specifically to do by our founder, John Africa, and because loyalty and commitment is our belief. You know, that's why we do what we do for Mumia Abu-Jamal. And we understand finally that it ain't even about Mumia. You know, it ain't about Mumia, because John Africa have taught us that when you allow for an injustice, then you have left yourself unprotected, because as surely as you have made that allowance, that injustice is going to boomerang and come right back and smack you in the face. If you live in a community and there is a rapist on the loose, but because you personally have not been raped, you feel like It has nothing to do with you. You have left yourself unprotected, because as long as that rapist is out there on the street, you're not safe. You're not secure. You know? So MOVE people understand that. And we will not allow for an injustice like that. We will confront it and work to eliminate it, specifically, you know, with our brother, Mumia Abu-Jamal.
I want to know what was the role of the established media then, and what is the role of the established media now in America?
I'll speak briefly. Len probably wants to add something to that. The role of the media is what it has always been, not just in Mumia's case, but historically. The media is an arm of the system, of the government. I mean, you might find every now and then one journalist that, you know, might break a story that gives him a name that, you know, the government would probably prefer not to be put out. But the media is very simply a tool of the system. In the case of the MOVE organization, I can tell you specifically, the media was deliberately used to paint a picture of MOVE that would lead people to believe that we deserved everything that the government did to us, that we were a black organization, a group of discontent, dissatisfied black people who just hollered, screamed, cussed people out, threatened people, didn't wash, didn't, you know, had any respect or regard for anything, that we were maniacs and should be eliminated. That's the picture the media was used to paint of MOVE. This was despite the fact that journalists, different media people, came to MOVE's home, talked to MOVE people for hours, even came inside our house, saw how we lived, spent the day with us. It didn't matter. The journalists would distort everything they saw and heard, or if they even tried, you know, to write an accurate accounting of it, their bosses, the editors, would cut it to shreds, so the true story would never get out. The same with Mumia Abu-Jamal. As I told you, he was president of the Association of Black Journalists. Now, even the black journalists turned their back on Mumia, would not even come out and say that the man didn't get a fair trial. They wouldn't even say that. Nobody was asking them to, you know, write articles and, you know, have the banner headlines, "Free Mumia Abu-Jamal." You know, nobody was even asking them to do that. But they would not even come out and say the man did not get a fair trial and he deserves a fair trial. The Association of Black Journalists that Mumia was president of turned their back on him. Mainstream media labeled Mumia a cop killer. You know, once he was convicted, convicted cop killer. I mean, that's what they always do. They talk about his affiliation with the Black Panther Party, and I mean, they are an arm of the system, and what we get from them is what we expect from any agency of government of the system.
Yeah, that's just one thing puzzling me, that I don't know too much about American law or international politics, but what's got me involved in this case is not so much what the law is saying, but what my morality tells me is right or wrong, and I think that's what brings most people here and all over the world out, is that something's telling them in their morality that, you know, this isn't right. I mean, this isn't just a legal case within America now, this is a worldwide issue, and it's a worldwide issue of morality, and I think, you know, I like to think that everybody's morality is pretty much the same as mine, that's why we're all here together. What it seems to me is that, I mean, for me it was quite a surprise that this could actually be happening in America. Obviously, to people, you know, a lot more people, it isn't a surprise, it isn't, you know, things won't be a surprise to me anymore, but what I want to know is surely, you know, people are looking to America to say, you know, how can this happen? You know, you're standing up there saying, you know, you stand up for human rights and all this. So surely the isn't the president of America in some way, I mean, isn't he responsible in some way for what is going on in Philadelphia? And has, I don't know if he's already made any comments on this issue, or if not, why not?
Let me just briefly say that I know it may be shocking to people outside of the United States, and really even shocking to a lot of people within America, within the United States, what is happening in that country. The, you know, case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, the MOVE bombing, you know, poor people being shot down or beat to death by police, you know, constantly seeing it in the news, hearing it on the radio, reading it in the newspaper, corrupt politicians, you know, stealing from the people, misleading, duping the people. It's shocking to people, but all you have to do is look at what America was founded on. Look at the foundation that America was built on. Rape, robbery, wholesale slaughter, enslavement and oppression. Isn't that what America was founded on? I mean, when America was intruded on, the air was clean, the water was pure, everything was in peace and harmony because the Indians lived in harmony with nature, with life, peacefully. Indians were slaughtered into virtual extinction, you know, murdered, raped, you know, babies killed, whole villages burned and pillaged. Africans were kidnapped from Africa, brought over to America to work, you know, this stolen loot, you know. So when you look at what America was founded on, it's not shocking at all. Even if you move forward to something that I'm sure you know about, Hugo, when you think about England, you had so-called freedom seekers leaving England and coming to America in search of freedom, religious freedom, freedom of speech, freedom of the press. But what happened after they got to America? They went to war with England, you know, saying that they were fighting for these things. They wrote the Declaration of Independence saying that when in the course of human events, you know, finally it is not only our right, but our duty to confront and ultimately abolish a government that proves oppressive, and that this is what, you know, they wanted America to be, but proceeded even from that time, you know, to quash freedom of speech, to step on and crush the freedom, the character of equality, the very meaning of equality, by giving no consideration to people of color, to blacks, you know, to the Indians who were here long before them. I mean, everything that America was founded on speaks to what is happening today. I mean, it was founded on that. That's the root of it. And when a root is rotten, you can't expect strong, healthy, vital fruit from it.
No, sorry, I didn't emphasize the question properly. I mean, what I mean to say is that now that it's such a worldwide issue that everyone is looking, I understand, you know, I know, you know, it's not such a surprise that these things are going on, I understand what you're saying, but, you know, they still have to, you know, create some kind of image that, you know, I don't know how they can answer this, but that's what I'm saying, is how does President Clinton, you know, washing this aside?
Yeah, if I could just speak to President Clinton and how he deals with it. I understand that here in Holland, you were able to see live on television the attack on Waco, where 80 people, about a dozen children, were incinerated by a federal a series of federal agencies that attack them. Now, everyone in the United States saw that, as well as worldwide. And for the President of the United States to accept no responsibility for that, and for the Attorney General of the United States to not even have the decency to resign to being responsible for all those deaths, but for the President to justify it and offer no excuse or apology, is a sign of the mentality that exists in the White House and throughout the government. I mean, people watched an act of massacre by federal authority, and there was no apology from the government and no reaction in the country. And that is a statement of where they're at right now. You have to understand the history of Bill Clinton. When he was running for the presidency, he was being opposed very strongly, and it looked like he might not win. So there was an episode occurring in the state of Arkansas where he was still the governor. A young man was scheduled to be executed. This young man was mentally infirm. After he had been involved in an act of violence in which people were killed, he ran out of the house, he put a gun to his head, he pulled the trigger, and he blew away half of his brain. He was then tried, even though mentally insane, convicted, and he was scheduled for execution. Well, word had gotten out that while Clinton was running for president and outside the state of Arkansas, the lieutenant governor who was standing in might spare this man's life because of his mental condition. What did Clinton do? He stopped campaigning for 2 days. He returned to Arkansas, and he made sure that that man was executed. And that immediately should have given people an understanding of what kind of a person this is. That he was willing to take the life of a poor soul for the sake of advancing his political career. And he's followed through in that fashion ever since becoming president. The rhetoric that he uses is better than the rhetoric of the former presidents that we had. He grew up in the 60s and the 70s. He learned from the civil rights movement. He learned from the anti-war movement. And he learned how to use the rhetoric. But his policies are the same as the policies of the right-wing Republicans. And his policies are particularly insensitive and inhumane. And so you can't expect very much from Bill Clinton. The only thing you can say is the people who are opposing him now are even worse. And so those are the choices that are in the country today. But you have 9 Republicans running for president. Every one of them is for the death penalty. You have 1 Democrat running for president, and he's for the death penalty. There is no one who is seeking high office who is against the death penalty in the United States today. And that's a statement of where they're at. But by the way, they're sadly mistaken. They think that being for the death penalty makes a great deal of difference. And they cite polls saying that 80% of the people in the United States support the death penalty. It's true when people are asked, do you support the death penalty? 80 to 85% say yes. But last year, they asked a different poll. They asked people, do you support the death penalty, or if given the option, would you prefer that people who kill get a life sentence? More than 50% chose a life sentence. So when they're given a chance, even in the United States today, people will express themselves in favor of life. The politicians opportunistically seize on what they understand the polls to reflect and exploit it. But no one has the courage or the backbone to really stand up to all this, and certainly Bill Clinton isn't one to do that.
But what about on an international stage? I mean, people in America, I don't know, people of the world don't necessarily sort of share the same, they get befooled by the same things, you know. I don't see, you know, what effect does international pressure, people like Amnesty International, how much you know, has Bill Clinton got to listen to them and got to answer to them?
Amnesty International, PEN, the European Parliament have all passed resolutions in support of Mumia. That they've all been presented. We're presenting, as I mentioned, 40,000 petitions from Paris. I have seen letters that President Chirac, right-wing president of France, has instructed the ambassador in Washington, the French ambassador, to present to the Secretary of State in the strongest terms the opposition of the French to the killing of Mumia. Does this have an impact? It has some impact. They have to weigh it. What are the signs of an impact? The Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Post, even the Philadelphia Inquirer have all editorialized the same thing. They all say Mumia is guilty. And then they say, but don't execute him. They're worried. They're worried. They're afraid that if Mumia is executed, the United States will be ostracized, as you suggest, that the United States will be put into the same category as Nigeria, which executed 7, Singapore, which has a draconian death sentence, Saudi Arabia, which executed 134 last year, Turkey, countries that have had terrible records, the United States will be cast into that position. So they are worried. And what is the establishment solution? The establishment solution is, at the last minute, don't execute Mumia, but make sure he stays in prison for the rest of his life, which is hardly a win. Mumia, as Ramona said, after 14 years living on death row, is entitled to freedom and should be out, and he's needed to be out. But I don't think any of them are considering that as a possibility. So what they might do is spare his life at the last minute and consign him to life without parole. And Mumia writes about what his life is like. If you can imagine being locked into your bathroom 23 hours a day, let out 1 hour so that you can exercise in a cage without anyone touching you or talking to you, a separate cage, then return to your bathroom, and being held in that condition for 14 years. That's the life he's lived. None of us can touch him. None of us, we have to talk to him, even the lawyers, through a glass, a thick plate glass window. No other prisoner can touch him, can't talk to him. He is in a state of isolation, sensory deprivation. How he is able to speak out on behalf of struggles all over the world, in Peru, in Kurdistan, and understand what's happening in the community. He reads, and he somehow is able to break through, and he's able to write about it. But it is rather remarkable that he's able to do that. So keeping Mumia locked away for the rest of his life is just, it's not as acceptable as the death penalty. But I think some of them are thinking that that's going to be the final position the government takes, and hoping that everyone will stop supporting him if his life is spared.
Is Mumia allowed to read all kind of books he wants in prison?
Not everything. There is a form of censorship. He can read a great deal, but I believe that if the prison takes the position that if anything is, quote, inflammatory, whatever a prison warden thinks is inflammatory, it's kept from Mumia. But he has been able to read and analyze, and when we go in and meet with him, we do discuss things that are occurring, and he tries to stay as current as possible. He is allowed to watch television. Pretty much. He can watch pretty much all the programs.
Only American television?
Yeah. filtered media, television filtered through Westinghouse Corporation and General Electric and Disney Corporation, which own the major media outlets. That's what he did.
If Abu Jamal have family, children, or
he's Mumia is a father, a grandfather, a husband. He has sisters and brothers. His mother passed away while he was in prison. So yeah, he has a family. His sister has become very active in supporting him. His oldest son has become very active in supporting him. So yeah, you know, he has a family. And in fact, in the audio tapes that are on sale out there, that's how Mumia begins these broadcasts that were supposed to be aired on National Public Radio. He says, you know, he's a father, a grandfather, a husband, and he describes who he is. Yes, you know, he has a family.
You know, it's interesting that that question is asked, because it is a good question. And it's always asked of me in the United States, because the American media does not cover the fact that he's a human being. Mumia is a twin. He has a twin brother. When I speak in the United States, I ask people who follow the case, do you know that he's a twin? No one knows that. His twin brother is a career military person. His older brother is a career military person. His sister has a master's degree in nursing. So it's quite a family, but the media will not even tell the very basic fact that he's a twin, because it humanizes him beyond where they want people to have an understanding of
him. I hope if there are more questions, because
I just want to add, what I read in the book, sorry, is that he was not even allowed to touch his children. So.
No contact at all.
Als er nog meer vragen zijn, in ieder geval, willen we... What about his brother right now?
We did find his brother, Billy Cook, who was the one who was being beaten. He said he would come to court and testify. He saw what happened. He said he knew that Mumia wasn't the shooter. He knew that Mumia himself had been shot. And he was prepared to come to court. He met with his lawyer. The judge then announced that if he came to court to testify for Mumia, he himself would be arrested on two charges that were outstanding against him, and he would have to go to jail on those charges. He knew, and he told us, that if he appeared to testify for Mumia and was then sent to jail, he'd be killed in the jail. And so we asked the judge not to send him to jail if he came in. The judge refused, and his brother disappeared again. We do not know where he is now. We will ask for that. It's done state by state. In the state of California, as you know, because of the OJ trial, they allowed cameras. That's why O.J. Simpson, in a city that's 15% African American, had 9 people of color, 9 out of 12. Mumia, in a city that's 49% African American, only had 2. The difference is the television cameras. With the cameras watching, the prosecution couldn't do what they did to Mumia. We'll ask for cameras, but the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, up till now, does not allow it. However, when we went to court last summer, there were lawyers present in court from Japan, from Germany. We're now asked, lawyers from Belgium have asked me last night if they could observe. Lawyers from France, lawyers from Italy will come. The courtroom will have international observers, and hopefully that will be enough to keep the prosecutors from doing what they did in the first trial.
I have a rather burning question to ask.
and it's twofold. First, I would like to address to the issue of Mr. Charles Gerry. I remember he once wrote a book on conducting the voir dire and minimizing racism in jury trials. I'd like to know if that book is available and if you're also working on something of that nature concerning Mumia's case. A second point I wanted you to contribute to was how the 104th Congress, they're turning back to the clock and they're trying to rewrite the Constitution of the United States. And in so doing, they have violated every constitutional right for every black prisoner and non-white prisoner in America. I want you to tell me if this process can be reversed. And third, this sister and her family, they were victims of murder. I would like to know that if lawyers' guilds, other type of lawyer guilds want to bring these criminals to justice, is what happened in the case of Fred Hampton when they murdered him, Hanrahan, and a lot of those people, they lost their jobs. And I want to know that if the pigs who came in and tried to assassinate their sister and tried to kill those other people and succeeded, what legal problems do they have? We're sitting up talking about these people staying in jail. I mean, how can a legal system be a legal system and allow this? I want you to do something about prosecuting these people. Malcolm X said, take it to the United Nations. Give me some hope.
On the first question, Charles Gerry, who was the counsel to the Black Panther Party, did write a book called Minimizing Racism in Jury Trials. It's a book that I keep on my desk. I use it in almost every case I try. It is widely disseminated. As far as I know, it's still available. It's widely used. There have always been good lawyers, even great lawyers. But there are very few lawyers who change the nature of law practice. Charles Gerry changed the nature of law practice in his defense of Huey Newton, because juries now are picked differently than they were before. And the lawyers for O.J. Simpson used Charles Gerry's book in picking the O.J. Simpson jury. And it wasn't used, obviously, in Mumia's case. But it sure should have been, and it would be used again. Lastly, your suggestion about taking the case to international fora, that is being considered and that will be done. There are a number of international fora that are available to Mumia. The World Court here is not, because only a nation can bring a suit in the World Court, as I understand it. An individual cannot. The World Court only hears suits by one country against another country. But the International Court of Human Rights, which is in North and South America, does hear cases from individuals. And if we have to, we'll take Mumia's case there. Also, the UN Commission in Switzerland hears cases of individuals, particularly victims of racial injustice. And we would seek that venue also. Both of those courts require that you finish first all of the court systems in the country you're in before you turn to them. So we have to exhaust what's available to us still in the United States, and then we will turn to them. That will happen, and we will do that. I think Ramona can talk to the legal situation that developed as a result of the attack in 1985 on the Move House.
First of all, I explained to, you know, everybody that I was the only one arrested as a result of the May 13th, 1985 confrontation and imprisoned for 7 years. Not one single official was ever even accused of any wrongdoing, not to mention be arrested, prosecuted, or imprisoned. The MOVE organization did several things. One thing that we did is the mothers and fathers of the children who were murdered on May 13th filed criminal murder complaints against the people that murdered their babies. Those complaints were written up, mailed from prison to the district attorney's office,
whose name is Lynn Abraham. She was the judge that signed the warrants for the cops to come out there May 13th. She was a judge at the time who is now district attorney. She is also the judge that signed warrants that sent cops out to our home during the first confrontation in 78. So she has a history with MOVE. Initially, she just did not respond to the complaints. And when MOVE people pushed it and kept pursuing it, you know, they said, well, you know, we must not have received them. We don't have any record of them. So they were sent out again. Finally, Lynn Abraham's office responded by saying they had investigated the matter and our complaint was unfounded. There was no basis for it. MOVE people filed a civil suit, a federal civil suit, you know, which deals with what they call constitutional violations. Two sets were filed. The parents of the children filed a suit and I filed a suit. We ended up settling the suit of the parents and really putting a hurting on the American government, on the Philadelphia government, because we would not allow the mothers and fathers of those babies to sit in a courtroom and have to listen to these officials talk about what they did to those babies. And secondly, my suit would not be settled under any circumstances, and the suit that I filed would be the one that would deal with the issue. It has been almost 11 years now. My suit has not come to trial yet. It is scheduled for trial April 1st. But during these past 11 years, several things happened. Individuals, Mayor Wilson Good, the managing director, the police commissioner, the fire commissioner, the two policemen who made the bomb and dropped the bomb, the two state troopers that flew the helicopter that the bomb was dropped from. The federal courts, Judge Lewis Pollack said, I cannot sue these individuals. They have immunity. And MOVE said, immunity? What is that supposed to mean to us? A word created by the system to say that officials can do whatever they want to do and not be held accountable for it? Well, that's what they told us, that these officials have immunity from complaints about civil, you know, rights violations. The only person, the only entity they're saying I can sue is the city of Philadelphia. Now, once you remove officials from the city of Philadelphia, who's left? The people. It wasn't the people that dropped the bomb on us, it was these officials. But the very ones that are responsible for doing it, they're telling us, cannot be held responsible. Secondly, there was also a ruling that the issue of dropping the bomb was being dismissed from my lawsuit because dropping that bomb was not excessive force. Officials did what any reasonable persons in their position would have done. That's what I was told. But, you know, there was enough pressure put on them that the judge had to turn around and reverse himself and put the issue of the bombing back in the suit. All the while this federal suit was being worked on, an attorney filed a complaint with the International, I think it's called the International Commission on Human Rights. And what they said was, we will not deal with this issue now. You know, finish your civil suit, finish the domestic courts, you know, arena, and then we will look at it. So, you know, that's where things are. There has been no outcry or rush to involvement by any lawyers organization at all. There has been no outrage by attorneys who claim to, you know, believe in the legal system, to want to do something about this, to hold people accountable, to even say that the district attorney had no right to, you know, ignore these private criminal murder complaints that were filed. Not one.
Thank you for being here, Ramona Africa and the other members of MOVE. Thank you for being here to share this day with us, Mr. Ryan Glass, to give us more information, update information of this situation, this case. Let me hope that and expect that this will not be the last action until Mumia is free, and maybe until the racist court system in the United States or maybe the whole world is being good. Thank you for being here. Dames en heren, in ieder geval nogmaals bedankt. Laten we hopen in ieder geval dat dit niet de laatste actie is om Mumia Abu-Jamal vrij te krijgen. En verwachten dat dit ook niet de laatste actie zal zijn. Wij bedanken u voor uw aanwezigheid en laten we nogmaals even, en dat is ook wat ik wilde zeggen, is dat wij hopen, we expect that next year maybe, or the other meeting will be with Mumia Abu-Jamal after his release from the death row. En bedankt voor uw aanwezigheid nogmaals.
Okay. Ja, laten we in ieder geval drie keer uitroepen. Free Mumia! Free Mumia! Free Mumia! Free Mumia!
Thank you.
Nee.